Good evening and welcome to Chicago Tonight Latino Voices. I'm Joanna Hernandez on the show tonight. A push to preserve affordable housing on Chicago's Northwest Side. Details on a summer event bringing more young people to the Loop.
What we really dreamt about was being in the community, bringing the books to the people.
And a bilingual bookstore for kids is hitting the road. And now to some of today's top stories. Chicago taxpayers are paying nearly $100 million in lawsuits related to a disgraced former police detective and are potentially on the hook for more. According to documents obtained by WTTW News, more than $35 million was paid to private attorneys to defend Reynaldo Guevara in 39 lawsuits alleging he framed people for crimes they did not commit. And $60 million was spent to settle six lawsuits by residents who said they were the victims of Guevara's misconduct. 41 Chicagoans have been exonerated after decades in prison in cases related to Guevara. Another 34 lawsuits are still pending. Guevara was never disciplined for his conduct as a detective, nor did he face criminal charges. There's more on this story on our website. Residents in Beverly, Morgan Park, and Auburn Gresham can once again use their tap water. That's after a water boil order was issued on Tuesday night because of an outage at the Roseland pumping station. City officials say the water main break has been repaired and the possibility of contamination has been ruled out. The Department of Water Management is advising residents to flush all faucets. You can find instructions for that on our website. The Cook County Sheriff's Department says it's recovered millions of dollars worth of stolen merchandise. The Sheriff's Office reports its Retail Crime Task Force has been working to fight thefts in retail areas along Michigan Avenue for the past year. The department says the task force recently busted a storefront selling stolen luxury items like designer sneakers, Gucci, Chanel, and others, recovering over $2.4 million in suspected stolen goods.
If you are going to be stealing, well, we will arrest you. We will hold you accountable. That's not going to change. And it's something that I've been trying to make the point to people. This is not somebody who's stealing a loaf of bread to feed their family. No. This is very organized.
Up next, helping to keep communities together. That's right after this.
Chicago Tonight, Latino Voices, is made possible in part by the support of these donors.
Neighbors on Chicago's Northwest Side are pushing for a new ordinance that aims to preserve affordable housing and prevent displacement of longtime residents. The proposal would expand a pilot program around the area of the 606 Trail that advocates say has successfully helped stabilize the area after it began to experience rapid gentrification. The ordinance would target areas of Logan Square, Avondale Hermosa, and Humboldt Park, all communities with large Latino populations that have seen significant displacement in recent years. Joining us now with more are Juliet de Jesus Alejandre, Executive Director of Palanque, LSNA, previously known as the Logan Square Neighborhood Association, Lupita Sue Delgado, who has lived in Logan Square her entire life with her parents and brother, and Joy Aregate, CEO of Bickerdike Redevelopment Corporation, a nonprofit developer of affordable housing, and Alderman Carlos Ramirez Rosa of the 35th Ward, who is one of the lead sponsors of the proposed ordinance. Thank you all for joining us. Juliet, I want to start with you. Your organization has been active in supporting this proposed ordinance. Now, before we get into all the details, tell us why this is so important for that area, for these areas.
Yeah, I mean, I think ultimately what we're saying is that Chicago is for everyone, right? Everyone who lives here, works here, studies here. And what we've seen is that it's become harder and harder for working class and poor families to remain in the city, period, and particularly in these communities of Logan Square, Avondale, Humboldt Park, and Mosa, that have seen some of the highest rates of rental increases and displacement. We just in Logan Square alone, in one of the communities, we've seen 20,000 Latinos forced to leave, right, in search for more affordable rentals and property taxes.
Do you know where they're going to?
Like, we're seeing, you know, sometimes west, right, west side of the city. We're seeing suburbs, sometimes leaving the state entirely. And so we believe that everyone has the right to the city and that we need to create avenues and protections for families to stay and continue to grow and pass down, right, like generational wealth. That's something that Latinos and Black families have not had the opportunity to do in this country. And we're just saying, like, we want to thrive as well.
And Alderman Ramiro Rosa, you're one of the lead sponsors of the ordinance. Talk us through the mechanics of what it would do.
Yeah, so this ordinance, the Northwest Side Housing Preservation Ordinance, builds on policies that have already been successfully piloted throughout the city of Chicago. As you noted, last term, we successfully passed two ordinances to protect 2-4 flat apartment buildings around the 606 Trail. So the 606 Trail is an amazing amenity. We love it. The community fought for it. But what we saw is that once that was built, people started purchasing the 2-, 3-, and 4- flat apartment buildings and turning them into luxury single-family homes or turning them into much more expensive condos.
Which people from the community couldn't afford?
They couldn't afford. They were being displaced. We saw a decreased enrollment in our schools. Mm-hmm. Our businesses struggled because they did not have the customer base necessary. And so we really wanted to take steps to protect those 2-4 unit apartment buildings, what are often called naturally occurring affordable housing because they don't receive government subsidy but are still affordable to working and middle class families, or what's sometimes called middle housing, right? Because it's not a single family home, it's not a big skyscraper, it's right in the middle serving middle class families. So we wanted to protect those buildings, one, from demolition. So we passed a surcharge that said that if you want to demolish these buildings near the 606, you're going to have to pay a bigger fee to dissuade you from demolishing that building. And then two, we passed an ordinance that said that if the block is majority 2 flats, 3 flats and up, you cannot build a single family home on that block. You can build a single family home if the block is already majority single family home, but if it's 2 or 3 flats or more, you have to build multifamily housing on that block.
And you saw that was successful. So now that you're trying to...
Precisely. So those two measures were successful. In Woodlawn, on the south side, they also passed a tenant opportunity to purchase pilot, which allows tenants to have an opportunity to buy their building if it goes to sale. And so we're packaging that all together, we're expanding the boundaries, and we're saying these are policies that we know help protect those 2-3 flats, those 4 flats, help protect long-time residents, and help keep people in their homes.
And Juliet, and in terms of money that would be raised through the demolition subcharge, how would that money be used?
Well, we're seeing an array of like community investment in affordable housing opportunities that may include like the community land trust. We have a very successful land trust in the community called the Here to Stay Land Trust. We're hopefully closing on 3 more properties this week that will bring us up to 18 units in our community. And, you know, in a part of the city where homes are going for over $900,000, we're able to get families in for about $250,000. So that's just one, right, opportunity. But obviously we have, you know, our partners at Bickerdike, right, who are developing affordable rentals because we need all kinds of housing, right, for all kinds of situations. We see an array of different uses for those fees. It would go right back to our families.
To the community.
Yep.
And Lupita, you actually grew up in Logan Square. Your family has been there for years. Can you tell me a little bit about what has your experience been like for you and your family as you've been noticing gentrification in your neighborhood?
Yeah, so when I was very young, I would walk back to my home and, you know, I would always see the paleteros, eloteros, the street vendors. And now I walk down my neighborhood and now I just see those big luxurious condos, those big single family homes. And they're quite ugly. And I miss seeing those brick houses with the dollar store signs that say welcome with those beautiful bright colors. My parents actually thought about selling our home back maybe like 3 years ago, just because property taxes were just increasing exponentially.
And I guess that has to feel discouraging for your family.
Yes, I think, you know, as my parents are Mexican, right, and they grew up with the idea that a good parent is one that always provides for their child financially. So at times I do get the sense that they feel like they failed as parents, but they haven't. And I've persuaded them to stay in the neighborhood. I don't want to move outside of Logan Square, and I don't plan on doing so.
That's really touching. Enjoy, your organization, as we mentioned, is a nonprofit focused on creating affordable housing. Will the ordinance have any impact on the ability for nonprofit developers like yourself to develop affordable housing?
I think, first of all, we need a lot of tools to develop affordable housing, and I think that this provides resources to do so. Whether or not it generally, whether or not it specifically generates funds to fund the projects that we work on, it will fund other projects that will provide badly needed affordable housing for residents in our neighborhood.
And Juliet, my big question is here, how would you respond to those folks, including some of the for-profit developers who say that neighborhoods have always changed over time and that this is just the way the real estate market works?
That's cute. we gotta remember that the Chicago, realtors, developers, bankers invented redlining, right? Perfected racialized segregation, right? And banking practices that frankly were racist, right? And kept generational wealth from families of color, right, for generations. And we see the effect still. Like, we could still, the communities that were redlined, right, 100 years ago are still pretty much look the same, right? And so to say, like, oh, this is just how it's always been. Well, how it's always been, it's stacked against working class people, right? And so what we're saying is we need to allow everyone to thrive, right? I mean, we're in 2024. I think it's time to let go of barriers and walls to thriving. So that's what I would say to.
And Joy, what are your thoughts? Would you say this ordinance will hold developers accountable?
I think it will hold developers accountable and really provide the opportunity for them to feed back, to give back to the communities that they're developing in. And that's really important. And, you know, oftentimes when developers come in, they're not thinking about the neighborhood. They're thinking about the real estate and they're thinking about the profit that they're going to make off of it. Mm-hmm. This is a way to really make sure that they're thinking about people and thinking about the affordability and people's ability to stay in the community.
Because would you say regardless they're going to make money?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. It, people often ask me, do you think that this is going to slow development anytime that there's a new policy? And I say, it hasn't yet.
Would you say that's the cost of doing business?
It's the cost of doing business, sure. Absolutely. If you want to develop in a particular neighborhood, you are. And I also just want to add to what Julieta said. If you're in a community, if you're developing in a community and you
Well, you know what I'll add? If you don't want to pay the surcharge, don't demolish the building.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And if you don't demolish the building, that means that that unit is going to be more affordable, and that means that that long-time tenant has a better shot at staying there.
You said rehabbing existing buildings.
That's right. And rehabbing always leads to more affordable housing options. Mm-hmm. New construction is the most expensive type of construction. It leads to those big ticket sales, million-dollar houses plus. You know, we have enough million-dollar houses in Chicago. Those raise property taxes for neighbors. So really, this is a tool to help protect the existing residents, the existing longtime homeowners, the existing tenants. But if you don't want to pay the surcharge and you're a developer, just don't knock the building
down. Don't knock the building. And last question. We only have time for one last question. Alderman Rosa, looking ahead, how soon might this be introduced for a vote at the City Council?
Well, we are working very diligently around the clock to put finishing touches on the ordinance. We hope to introduce it on Wednesday, July 17th. You know, the provisions that we passed last term sunset at the end of December. And so we are on the clock to make sure we get these provisions in place and expand them, just like we said we would, by the end of this year.
Well, thank you all for sitting down with me and talking about this. Appreciate it. Up next, why a family of book lovers is hitting the road.
Make WTTW your home for 2024 convention coverage. Find the latest news on our website at wttw.com/news. And spend each convention night with us beginning at 5:30 p.m. with live Chicago Tonight reporting and analysis from the convention before and after PBS NewsHour's primetime coverage. WTTW, your source for trusted, independent news and information.
In need of some new books for your kids? Well, you just might be in luck. Viva Los Libros could be coming to a neighborhood near you. The online shop just launched a bookmobile, and owners Nina Sanchez, Michael Wren, along with their daughter Vida, are eager to share their love of reading with the community.
What I love about books is that you can experience new worlds and learn so much about yourself, but also other people. We started our bookshop about 4 years ago in the pandemic, really responding to this need for bilingual and Spanish books. This is from personal experience with my own family, my own child, understanding the amount of work it took to find quality bilingual books. We really wanted to come from this place of bringing literature that can be restorative to communities. We wanted to bring access to language and accompany that with ideas about justice. We decided to launch the fourth year with a full bookmobile to be able to get to even more communities, both in and around Chicago. We also wanted to tie back to our culture, and so taking inspiration from Latina street vendors and having not just a vehicle but a push cart that is like a fruit vendor or a tamale vendor that you would find on the corner of any neighborhoods here in the city. Children are responding in really open and obvious positive ways about what they're seeing on the cover of a book and feeling excited about that. It really helped me understand the healing nature of books and stories and having access to those. Viva Los Libros is really about the life-affirming nature of books and the stories that we all have to share. Once the school year starts, we'll take our bookmobile on the road to our bilingual book fairs at different schools. We partner with a lot of early childhood education centers and elementary schools to bring bilingual and Spanish language books to their kids. Our business is a family business. A lot of it was DIY and elbow grease, and I give my husband, who's the partner in the business, a lot of credit for that because he saw my vision and then ultimately produced something with his own two hands that makes it possible for us to have the bookmobile. We didn't have a daydream of being booksellers and sitting in a bookshop. What we really dreamt about was being in the community, bringing the books to the people, and that's what we've been able to do.
And you can find Viva Los Libros at the Tacos y Tamales Festival in Pilsen on July 19th. For more information on the rest of the tour, check out our website. And thousands of teenagers and young adults call Chicago their home, but not all of the area's youth get an equal opportunity to explore the heart of the city. One organization is working to change that by partnering with business and community groups to host Downtown Day. The event is this Saturday and aims to get young people out of their neighborhoods to explore the Loop. Joining us now with more are Jamal Cole, founder and CEO of My Block, My Hood, My City. Marquel Washington, an Explorers programming intern at My Block, My Hood, My City. And Michael Edwards, president and CEO of Chicago Loop Alliance. Thank you guys all for joining us. What a fun event. You know, Jamal, I have interviewed you before. Your organization is very focused on the youth and giving them opportunities. Tell me about where this idea to host Downtown Day came from.
Yeah, well, first of all, thank you for having me and Marquel. The idea came from volunteering at Cook County Jail. And at the jail, the residents would ask me where I worked. And I said, I work at a trading firm downtown next to the Sears Tower. I expected them to say, oh, what's a trading firm? What do you do? And they were like, oh, what's the Sears Tower? I mean, hold up. You've never been to the Sears Tower? I was like, how many people in the jail have been to the Sears Tower? Raise your hand. Nobody did nothing. How many people have been to the John Hancock? Raise your hand. Nobody said nothing.
So that kind of
blew my mind. So that's when I realized they hadn't been downtown. They hadn't waited for a taxi. Hadn't been in an elevator. One kid said he had been downtown, but he thought downtown was out of town. And so I would take them to a little window and say, hey, there's a Sears Tower. It's 100 football fields high. There's a Hancock building. It's 100 football fields high.
I'm like, hey, this is your city.
Yeah. I mean, just like the architects built that, you can be the architect of your own destiny. And that's how it started.
What would you say is important to make young people feel welcome to be downtown?
I just imagine what it's like for a young girl from like North Lawndale, a place where hope often is overshadowed by adversity. And now she's standing downtown looking at the skyline. She doesn't see just a big building. She sees her future is bright and full of opportunity. She can see herself as a leader just by being downtown, and downtown represents opportunity, and they own it. It's their city.
So. Well, and Marquel, you were just telling me that you started, you know Jamal since you were 14 years old. Now you're 23 years old. You've grown from a mentee to a mentor at the organization. Now, tell me what has inspired you to stay and continue to, you know, pass on what you've learned to the youth.
The main thing was really the youth. So I seen a lot of kids that were just like me in my shoes. They could get sucked into the streets. They could get sucked into different things, but they choose to be in this program where it has different things to offer them and different levels to offer them at. Just really watching kids and seeing them smile and want to be invested into our program, that's really what made me want to give back.
What would you say excites you about, what gets you excited about downtown?
What gets me excited about downtown is really just seeing the skyline, really just being able to see people of different ethnics and different, like, cultures being downtown and everybody be welcoming down there.
What's your favorite
spot? Don't be a lot of drama. When I go downtown, I like just really going to the shoe stores or going to the Riverwalk.
You can't go wrong with the Riverwalk, right?
True.
And Michael, Downtown Day offers boat cruises, museum access, and other attractions. Can you walk us through the itinerary?
Sure. So folks come down in the morning. There's a kickoff at 10 o'clock, and Jamal will be hosting that with others at the Harris Theater. The kids get a $50 gift certificate, a $50 card.
Visa card.
You can't free.
Free?
You can't go wrong with
$50. And we have 40 businesses that have signed up in the Loop and along the Magnificent Mile to offer discounts and opportunities for those kids to spend that cash on something, for everything from food to clothing to experiences. And the experiences we think are really special. There's a lot of art galleries. There's a lot of new kinds of experiences, the Museum of Illusions, for example. There's a lot of interesting things to do that they really need to take advantage of, and we're happy to have them.
And Jamal, what was that experience like in that journey, going into the businesses and talking to them and sharing your idea? Were they welcoming to that?
Yeah, Michael was right away. You know, I feel like they realized that taking kids from the South and West Side downtown is not just about sightseeing. It's about opening the doors of opportunity wide enough for every kid to walk through. It's about, we always talk about leveling a playing field, so every kid, regardless of their zip code, can dream without limits.
Is that how you feel, Michael? That's how you jumped on board?
Right. For example, Canon Design, one of the great architecture firms in Chicago, is opening their place so the kids can understand that in this enormous building that they've walked by, maybe, they could be architects. This is what architects do. This is what an office looks like. That's powerful.
Almost making them feel like they could also...
Absolutely. Exposing them to that so they go back and they say, you know what? I could be there too. That is my downtown. It's everybody's downtown.
Marquel, what are your thoughts on that?
Like last year, for instance, when I seen a lot of kids going to different businesses that we had open and stuff, they enjoyed it. Even me, for instance, when I was in the program, going to different businesses, it taught me that I can do it. Going to different ball games, anything.
Was there times that you felt that you were excluded, like you shouldn't enter a place?
No. Not really.
That's great.
Most places, especially with the program I have been with, most places I have been, they open their doors up to us with open hands. They always allowed us to do what we needed to do in the program, just to teach different things, just to open up the view to the youth, basically.
How many people attended last year?
Last year it was about 860 teenagers, and this year we've doubled it. It's already 2,100 signups, and we're taking walk-ups too.
2,100 signups.
Yeah, I mean, we want it to be many more.
See that amount of people sign up, you know, how does that make you feel? It started from one idea, and now it's becoming a reality for the second year.
Yeah, ideas are powerful weapons and tools that can change the world, and we need good ideas in Chicago, you know? And so I'm so excited we have doubled the students, but we also have doubled the businesses because of folks at the Loop Alliance and Magnificent Mile Association. We went from 6 businesses last year to over 40 that are opening their doors this year. I mean, it's phenomenal.
Was it important to you to bring other businesses as well?
Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah.
What do you want people of Chicago to know about this program as well?
Well, we want the kids to know that the Loop and the Magnificent Mile belongs to them too. And so this is a way for us to really demonstrate that by inviting them to come down, give them a little bit of cash so they can have a little bit more fun than maybe just walking around. And they can really experience the city and see themselves here that day and into the future. We're really happy about it.
And Mark, well, tell me about your experiences. I mean, you grew up, again, when you were 14, I'm still just thinking about the relationship, you know? Like, what was it feeling like last year? You know, what were they telling you?
Most kids told me they have fun and they'll love to do it again. Just like he said, when you go downtown and you go to experience a day like downtown, that you get to realize that the city's yours. There's more to offer than where you're from, like the block you're from or the little bubble that you're in. When you go downtown, especially for a day like downtown, day where you got a lot of free stuff you can go do, you get a $50 gift card, you can go do a lot of different things. Because we got a lot of different businesses, like they said, that's opening up for the students.
How do you encourage people to be part of something like that?
I made a lot of phone calls for this program.
Did he?
I made a lot of phone calls.
So you're learning how to talk to people.
Yeah, so just really phone calls and just social media is a big weapon right now to the world. So just using social media, phone calls, and just getting back out to the streets and showing people that we here with them. We just not going to throw the event. We're going to have fun with you. We're going to be here with you every step of the way through the event and after the event,
Jamal, are you proud of him? Is this what you hope for?
Yeah, for sure. Like, Marquel, he's always been, he's not supposed to have favorites, but he's always been my favorite. I think he's going to be the CEO of this organization
one day. It's live now. It's out there.
No, it's already told him. I mean, this guy is going to be the CEO. He's going to run the organization. He's been that way since I met him. I'm very proud of him and his family, so.
Anything else that you would like to share about your organization?
Well, yeah, I would just say to the youth that are listening or watching that Downtown Day is more than just about just coming downtown for a day trip. It's about making a statement that of resilience and determination. It's really about letting the city know that where you come from don't determine how far you're going to go. And yeah, I just want to say thank you to everybody that's donated. Please continue to donate. It is expensive. It's hard to run a nonprofit in Chicago.
You're doing it.
Thank you.
What's your favorite part of the city?
My favorite part of the city is Chatham, because Chatham is not a it's not a community. It's a state of mind, and that state of mind is you know, block clubs, and I just love Chatham. It's a place I call home. So
that's awesome. Yeah. How about you?
I love the Riverwalk. You know, it's a new amenity. It's where everybody comes together. And it's not just folks from out of town that might be coming from a distance to come to the Bean. It's folks that actually live and work downtown. They really kind of frequent the place. And it's just open to everybody. And there's so much to see, and you don't have to spend any money.
Well, thank you, guys. Thank you. Good luck
on
Saturday.
Thank you, John.
Again, the event is this Saturday. There's more information on our website. And that's our show tonight. Be sure to check out our website. Check us out at WTTW.com/news for the very latest from WTTW News. And join us tomorrow night at 5:30 and 7 and 10 for the weekend review. Now, from all of us here at Chicago Tonight, Latino Voices, I'm Joanna Hernandez. Stay healthy, stay safe. Buenas noches.
Closed captioning is made possible by Robert A. Clifford and Clifford Law Offices, a personal injury law firm dedicated to preserving the dignity and rights of all individuals.